Jewish audio on Chabad.org.
Help of Hashem, we are learning Bava Metzia Daf Samach. We left off on Daf Nun Tes Amid Beis, all the way at the bottom of the Amid, starting with the Mishnah. The Mishnah here is going to explain, speak out various business practices, some of them that are considered halachically legitimate, and others are considered deceptive. Says the Mishnah, Ein ma'arvin peiros bepeiros, explains Rashi, that if a seller told a buyer that I will be selling you peiros, here means produce, grains, from a specific field, being that the seller said that he'll be selling the produce from that specific field, he could not mix into the produce of that field produce that grew in another field. Says the Mishnah, that is true, afilu chadoshim bechadoshim. Now we're going to generally categorize produce into two categories. You have fresh produce and you have older produce. Interestingly, in this context, the older the produce, the older the grain, if the buyer is going to turn it into flour, he's going to benefit from older. Because the older grain, the more dried out they are, and they will give a greater yield of flour. So says the Mishnah, that this Ein Ma'arvin, when specified from a specific lot, specified from a specific field, is even if he wants to mix new produce from another field into new produce from this field. Even that is something that cannot be done. Turning to Daf Samach. And the Ein Tzarich Lomed, and it goes without saying, Chadashim B'Yishanim, that if the person, if the seller wants to mix fresh produce into old produce, so therefore he is going to decrease the quantity of flour. The buyer agreed to the sale, Dafka, because he wanted the Yishanim, so that certainly is considered deceptive and therefore not allowed. Continues the Mishnah, Be'emes Amru, as the Gemara is going to say that Be'emes means that the halacha is, Rambam says, whenever Chazal used the words Be'emes, it means halacha l'moshe misinai, that Biyayin, unlike in produce, when it comes to a sale of wine, even when the seller specified that they will be selling to the buyer mild wine, he tiru la'arav kasha berach, you are, the seller is allowed to mix aged wine, which is superior, into the mild wine. And the reason why he can do that, because actually adding the strong wine into the mild wine will improve the quality of the mild wine. So not only is there no deception, he's actually selling a product which is of greater quality. Continues the Mishnah, a seller cannot mix sediment from wine into wine. And then the Mishnah apparently says a statement which appears like a contradiction, but you could include in it sediment. And as the Gemara is going to point out, that there is an inherent stira in these words of the Mishnah, and the Gemara will explain and resolve the meaning of it. Continues the Mishnah, Mishnas out of mayim biyenoi, if a person diluted his wine by adding water into it. So first of all, says the Mishnah, lo yimkerenu b'chanos, the seller is not allowed to sell it in a store to individual customers, to the final consumer, only if he notifies each and every customer, I want you to know that this wine is diluted. However, the one who mixed water into wine can never sell this wine to a merchant. By the way, a merchant can also include a store owner into a person who is not the final consumer, even if the seller will notify the merchant, will notify the wholesaler or the retailer that this is the diluted wine. You're not allowed to do that because the final seller, the tagar, will use this wine to cheat customers. And we're going to read later in the Rashi, and Rashi says that this isur is included in the Lifnei Iver Loisit and Mirshul, and we'll speak about it later when we get to that part of Gemara and Rashi. Weiter, continues the Mishnah, however, makim shenohagu lahatl mayim biyayin, but in a place where everyone had the custom of diluting wine, so everyone bought diluted wine, so then yatilu, then there is no fraud over here, there's no cheat over here, and therefore the producer is allowed to do that dilution. Continues the Mishnah, Hatagor, if you have a merchant Neutel mehei geronois v'noisen l'toich megura achas. A merchant who was not the grower. Everyone knows that a merchant or a wholesaler of grain doesn't buy his product from only one grower, only from one source. So he's allowed to buy grain from 5 different threshing floors, and he can put it into one silo, and everyone knows that it is from a mixed source. Or likewise, similar, mehei gitois, he can buy wine from 5 different wine presses. Then he can put it into one cask. Everyone knows that, again, that this middleman is not only buying it from one source. However, but he should not purposefully mix them, as Rashi explains the final clause in the Mishnah, that if this tagor, to get for himself a good name, always buys it from sources that have superior wine. He doesn't only buy it from one source, but the vast majority of wine is from this better sourced. And now that he gets a good name, everyone knows, oh, that merchant, that wine seller, oh, he has the best wine. Now he's starting to buy more and more wine from inferior wine producers. That is something that he's not allowed to do. In other words, everyone knows that they mix. But once he gets himself a name that he has a greater quality, he cannot then deceive people. Now that I have myself a good name, I'm going to continuously add from an inferior quality. This is a deceptive business practice. Oh. Chamesh lav davka. Baruch atu Adonai Eloheinu melech ha'olam shehakol nehi midvarei. Says the Gemara, referring back to the first case in the Mishnah. And again, we're learning the Mishnah the way Rashi explained it, that if a seller specified to the buyer, I am selling you peiros, here does not mean fruit, means produce, grain. I'm selling you produce from this field. So we learned in the Mishnah, there is new produce and old produce. Here, old is good. The older the grain, the more flour it will yield. The only advantage that you have for newer grain is that if the buyer wants to store it, being that it's very fresh, he can store it for much longer time. But if the seller told him, I'm selling you from this lot, he cannot mix others into it. Says the Gemara, according to Braisa, Tan Rabbanan, says in a Braisa, Ein sarach leimer, there's no need to say, it goes without saying, Chadoshois mei arba, that if the price of fresh grain is cheap, for one seller, you get 4 sa'a. The yeshanois, and the price of older grain, like we said, which is better because it produces more flour, is more expensive. Mishalosh, with one seller, you only get 3 sa'a. I mean, it's more expensive. Of course, the ein ma'arvin. Once the seller told the buyer, I'm selling you from that lot, which happened to be old, you can't mix produce that is cheaper when you are buying something that should be more expensive. The chiddush of our Mishnah is Elo afilu chadoshos mishalosh. Even if you're living in a place that the majority of the people in this place now are buying grain to store, so they're going to pay more money for the new. In other words, the new will be more expensive. Even if the news are mishalosh, from one seller you only get 3 sa'. V'yishanos, and older grain you can buy for less money, or the same amount of money gets you more of it, it's cheaper. The yishanos mi'arba, even in such a case, ein ma'arvin, you cannot mix. Once you told the buyer, I'm selling you from this lot, don't mix from another type, from another quality, even if it's more expensive. Why? Because the only reason why the new grain is more expensive, mipnei she'adam roitzel le'ashna, because people there wanted to store it for a long time. So they want to start out with fresher grain. But could be this buyer, Dafka, wanted to buy older grain because he wants to make it into flour. Bottom line is, once you show a buyer, I'm selling you from here, then you can never mix in another quality grain, even if it's more expensive, because maybe he doesn't want that quality. Because for him, the one that he wants is dafka, this quality. And like in our example, he wants to turn it into flour, and older grain yields more flour. Be'emes amru, then the Mishnah says that they said in truth, that biyayin, when it comes to buying wine, and as we spoke out the Mishnah, when the buyer specified that he wants to buy mild wine, here the seller can add strong wine into it, because strong wine will better the mild wine. So here he's doing something that is for sure only to the benefit of the buyer. That b'yayin etiru l'arav kasha berach m'pnei shu mashbichai. So first of all, says the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Elazar, that I want you to know, Ado Amra, whenever the Mishnah uses the words be'emes, be'emes means, this means to say, kol be'emes amru halachi. And as the Mefarshim explained, the Mishnah gave a reason. And the reason is undisputable, that by wine, always, older wine is better. So being, and that, so the Mishnah says, since that old wine betters the quality of mild wine, so even though the seller told the buyer, I'm selling you mild wine, yain rach, he can for sure add old wine. The Mishnah gave a reason. And the reason why the Mishnah gave a reason is for you to accept it. Because now that you know the tam, no one can refute that. That's the meaning of be'emes. This is the way it is, halacha. Again, the Rambam says, whenever Chazal say be'emes amru, it means halacha l'moshe m'sinai. Omar Rav Nachman, I want you to know that mixing of wines, you're telling me that for sure adding older wine only ups the quality. 1 second. That is only true ubein hagito yishanu. That is only true when this mixture happened during the wine production season. In other words, the wine was not fully fermented. Then when you mix two wines together, when you add older wine into mild wine, the old wine will up the quality. That we know for sure, but it won't have any negative side effects. However, if the fermenting of the wine ended, it's not fermenting anymore, even if you're adding older wine into more mild wine, here you might be upping the quality on one hand, but there is a negative side effect, and that is that the tastes of the wine might not combine properly. You know, today we know from whiskeys, blended whiskey now is cheaper than a single cask or a single malt, because when you start blending, it could be you ruining the taste. So what the Mishnah says is only when the fermentation did not finish, there putting different wines together will not ruin the taste. It only adds the strength to the wine, which is a good thing, but after the gitois, after it finished, then don't say mixing is good. Asks the Gemara v'ha'idna, but nowadays, meaning in the times of the Gemara, the Kama Arvi, that there the custom was that merchants who bought wine from different sources, even after the wine finished fermenting, they still mixed it, shaloi bein hagitais, even after the season of fermentation was over. So how can they do that? So Amar Rav Papa, the yadei, v'komachli. Adarab, but once something becomes common practice, and everyone knows that the middlemen, not the ones who produce the wine, the ones who buy them from the factory owners, and they're the ones that sell it to the customers, or they're the wholesalers, that they all mix from different sources. All of the wines are not single malt, all of the whiskeys is a mixture. So if everyone knows that, so then there's no deception. That's why it's permitted.
The cloud of what is the default transaction, right?
Also, well, let's go back. There's many rules here. Rav Acha Bereid Ravika Amar, that ha-mani mean that nowadays that we accept them mixing wines even after they finish fermenting, that is based on the Tana of Rabbi Achahi, the Tanya Rabbi Acha Matir, b'davar hanitam. He has another rule. That even if the common practice is that no one mixed wines after they are finished product, you're going to have a mixture. Lav dafka, it's going to be good for the taste. Rabbi Acha gave another rule. Whenever the customer has the option of tasting that which he is buying before he buys it, which is the minig even here in the markets. Many times they put out from this batch a fruit, I know for sure here in the Persian markets, and taste it. So if you had the option to taste it before you bought it, there's no deception. Now, if you didn't taste it, that's on you. It makes sense. In other words, the whole deception is that you thought, don't think, taste. That's why ha'idna, you're allowed to do it. Now, in the Mishnah, and when the Gemara limited the Mishnah, it was in a makim that you didn't buy it. You went to the cask here. You don't have the option to taste it. You're buying closed bottles. You can't taste a bottle. So here you're relying on the quality of the seller. He's allowed to mix old into mild only before the season is over. Vaited. Ve'ein ma'arvin. We had this inherent contradiction in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says you're not allowed to mix sediment of wine into wine. And then the Mishnah says in the next line, Avol noisim lo yashamarav. Noisim lo yashamarav doesn't only mean that if there is already sediment, you can sell it with it. That's a sugi we learned before in Daf Mem Amud Beis. Here, the Mishnah says you can put sediment into wine. So you can't, and then you could. How do you work that out? And if you're going to answer my noisin hashamarav, the meaning of you can put it in is only the komit numaydalei, that you can put it in if you notify him. Maybe that's the meaning of the Mishnah. That can be. Because since it says later in the Mishnah that loyim kerenu b'chanus, that if you diluted the wine, you put water into wine, you can't sell it to the final consumer. Elim came by di, only if you notify the final consumer. And then the Mishnah added, v'loy l'tagir, you can never sell it to the non-final consumer, to the merchant, to the store owner. Afal pishum idea, even if you'll notify him, because he's going to use it to cheat people. So the fact that the Mishnah later spoke about notifying versus not notifying, and the Mishnah did not mention it here when it comes to the sediment, michlal, that proves, second wide line, that the reisha, that this prohibition of adding sediment has nothing to do with notifying. Afal pidaloy moidaloy, because if not, the Mishnah would have also clarified. The Mishnah didn't. It's a statement across the board. So it's a kasha. Amar Rav Yehuda explains that Rav Yehuda and the Mishnah hachika amar, eim arvan shmarim shol emesh v'shol yoyim. Do not mix the sediment of yesterday with today. V'loy shol yoyim, nor from today to yesterday. Comes along Rashi, importantly, and he teaches yesterday and today, lav dafka. Look inside the second wide line in Rashi. Rashi teaches Rav Yehuda's answer that the Gemara is saying very simple. Sediment from one barrel will ruin wine from another barrel. It's not about today and yesterday. Just most times, you know, you fit a barrel a day. So you cannot mix from one barrel into another barrel. But if a person was selling wine from one barrel and they're pouring wine out slowly, so the sediment is staying in the bottom, and the seller wants to take sediment from the same barrel and put it into the wine up until a certain percent, again, ayin and daf mem amid beis, that is something that's permitted. If the minhag hamakim was that you get wine with sediment. So the Mishnah is just notifying you like a practical thing. If you're going to sediment from the same bottle, you can add into that wine. But don't add it into any other wine. It's going to ruin it. That's what the Mishnah is saying. Avol noisin lo yashimarav. And tanya nami achi. And here we're proving Rav, the Amora, Rav Yehuda's interpretation from Abraisa. Interestingly, from Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Hashoyfe Yayin Lachaveri. The word Hashoyfe means when you pour wine slowly. When you pour wine slowly, the sediment stays in the bottom. So the Chaveri is getting pure wine. Harezelo Ya'arv, and you are allowed to add a certain percent of sediment into the wine. So says the Braisa, Harezelo Ya'arv Shalemesh B'Shalyayim. Don't take sediment, again, Larashi, from another barrel, from yesterday's barrel, and put it into today's sale. V'loy Shalyayim B'Shalamesh. Neither from today into yesterday's batch. Avol ma'arav shalemesh b'shalemesh. Yesterday's can be put into yesterday's. Today's can be put into today's. That's what the Mishnah is saying. No, there's a certain percent of sediment that's acceptable. We had before, again, daf mem, whether it's a percent and a half. Whatever is acceptable, only do it from that batch itself. Vaitim. Mishan as arav mayin b'yena. Whoever mixes water into wine, you diluted the wine. So the Mishnah says, "Harez Elohim kerenu b'chanos." You're not allowed to sell it to the final consumer. Elim kein moidia. Only if you notify each customer, it's diluted wine v'chuli. Now, says the Gemara, Rava story. Rava aisu lechamra mechanusa. People bought to Rava a gift. They bought him wine and mazgei. Rava, everyone, the final consumers always diluted it. But again, the norm then was to buy undiluted wine. They gave him a gift. Rava for himself diluted it. Ta'ameh, he tasted it. And v'lehava basam, and he didn't like the wine. So what do you do today if you don't like a product? In many stores, there's a policy. So Rava returned it. Shadrei l'chanus, he sent it back to the store. Now, the policy of the store was they accepted it. Or maybe from Rava they accepted it. But here there's another problem. Our Mishnah says, you're not allowed to dilute wine. And if you dilute the wine, you have to sell it to the customer, notify each and every customer it's diluted. Here, Rava sent it back to the store. So, Amalei Abaye v'hanan tanan v'loy l'tagar. You can never give diluted wine to the non-final customer. Tagar means a merchant, a wholesaler. But it also goes to a retailer. In other words, he's not the guy that's going to drink it. Eli, afal pi shahidiyai. Even if you notify him. So, just to read out inside the Rashi, it's somewhere in the middle of the wine Rashis. Look inside, the beginning of the line, Ve'ikel lifnei iver. That's the famous Rashi. Rashi says the problem of giving a merchant or a retailer diluted wine is that you're violating lifnei iver l'sitin michshel. In other words, he's going to take your diluted wine and sell it as non-diluted wine. And here the problem is, and it's good to remember this, that the lav of lifnei iver is only betray ivra denahare. We learned this many times together. So the example would be, if a kohen, let's say, if a person is a nazir, and they vowed not to have wine, and they're living in a neighborhood on the other side of the river, there's no wine in his area, and he cannot access wine. If I bring him wine from the other side of the river, I'm oivir lifnei iver. I'm placing a stumbling block because I'm giving him something that he could not have gotten on his own. But if in his side of the river there's wine to be gotten, even though I'm giving him wine, I'm over lift naivir. He could have gotten it himself. So every storekeeper can dilute the wine. So that's the issue with Rashi. Many people say that Rashi is lav dafka, but Rashi means that you're being misayeya lo evrei avera. It's not a lav midoraisa, but that's a, you know, it's also a rabbinic rule. Don't help someone sin, even if they could have sinned without you. And we'll leave it at that. Let's go back into the Gemara. So Amarle, so Rava responded, why was I allowed to give back to the store diluted wine? Because mizgadidi meida yedia. I dilute wine so much. Remember that, Danny? We had this in the beginning. Rava, you know, he added a lot of water. Everyone will notice that it's diluted. The problem of selling wine that is diluted as non-diluted wine is when you can cheat a customer. When you look at the wine, it looks the same. But you added at least 5% of water. No one will know. That's called cheating. But the Rava added, whatever it was, a third, I forgot, or a fourth, he added the large quantity of water. You can see that it's diluted wine. Frank Digamara, hold on. Even though Rava gave wine back in a way that the storekeeper cannot sell this as undiluted wine, but what the storekeeper could do is, he can take that wine, he's selling wine, he has a lot of wine, and he can add some wine to it, but not fully. He'll add just enough wine to it so the customer can no longer notice that it's diluted, and then he'll sell it as undiluted wine. But there is still some water in it, that the owner will add more to it. And he'll make it thicker, and then he'll sell it again as undiluted wine when it's a bissel diluted. So the Gemara says that's not a question. Because imkain ain't ledover safe. In other words, you can never sell anything to a merchant. Because if you sell something to the merchant, who's selling it to the final consumer, and he always has the possibility of playing around with it, making it good enough, deceiving the customer, and making more profit because he sold you something of lesser quality. If the merchant is the one that needs to do something to the product, to cheat, then me selling it to the merchant cannot be prohibited. If not, no one can sell anything to a merchant. But I cannot sell to the merchant diluted wine, lachatchila, because he'll take it and he'll resell it. And I'm being misayeh lo evrei avera.
What stops the merchant from diluting any wine himself? The whole thing that
seems really No. It makes a lot of sense.
If you sell him the full strength wine.
Correct. He won't do that.
He's a crook.
You can't compare, Danny, when I buy something, God, when the storekeeper buys something and he has to himself do something to cheat people versus when he buys a ready packaged product which already selling as is a cheat. The temptation is much greater. You can't compare. This happens, whoever's in business knows that. You don't sell products, you sell a service. You have products, you get it, you're in the gray market, you buy something, you don't know how good it is, I bought it, I'm selling it. No one tampers with their merchandise. But they many times will sell merchandise that's not 100% okay because I don't really know. Maybe it is good. It is from a good batch. Who knows? And if the customer won't like it, he can replace it. Many merchants do this in our neighborhood over here. Okay, right. It says the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, the Tana Rabbi Yehuda says, these are such important rules. Lo yechalek hachenveni. A storekeeper, this is advertisement, cannot give out kaloyos, toasted grains, egoys and nuts, litinoikas to children. In other words, how do you sell? Many bakeries do it. They want the parents to come by, so they give to every kid a cookie. So Rabbi Yehuda says that the seller cannot give out to the kids treats, because this is a gimmick, causing the kids to want to go there. So why will the parents buy grain in the neighboring store? They'll buy grain over here. The kids will be happy. These are the words of Rabbi Yehuda. Comes along the Chachamim and they say mutter. We'll see in the Gemara. Next, v'lo yifcheis es hashar. A merchant can never sell beneath the market value, beneath the market price. The Chachamim aimenim zochor latoiv. Not only could he sell, good for him. This is the question that you have all over, forever. In other words, whose good are we looking after? Remember when Ralph opened up over here a kosher section? So it's good and bad. It's bad for the other merchants. But it's good for the customer. It's good for the consumer. And that's the nekud of the Chachamim. That whenever we have to pick and choose, and that's the halacha, we care more for the consumer than a competitor. Let's go weiter. Lo yavoid es agris en divrei abashol. People sold beans. Now beans were normally sold before they were sifted. So a person is going to go ahead and he's going to sift the beans. Now the cost of the sifting of the beans and the quantity of bran that he takes out, let's say he'll diminish it by 10%, because 10% is bran, and he's going to charge not just 10% more, he's going to charge 50% more. So don't do that, because he ends up doing a little bit of work and overcharging a lot because of it. And the Chachamim say it's mutter. The Gemara is going to speak out every case. However, everyone agrees that a merchant is not allowed to make the produce on top of the pile good, sifting it, when the rest is not good. That's already cheating. That's already deceptive. That you can't sift only the top layer, because then you're stealing people's eyes. It looks like high quality, and then people, you know, buy from that pile, and in there, you know, it's not sifted. Another din, ve'ein mefarkesin, you cannot beautify not a man, speaking about an eved, when you sell an eved, you want to make him look better, we'll see in the Gemara what that means, nor can you beautify an animal, nor can you beautify kalim, deceptive. Today when you buy everything is so beautified, and so fake,
no promotion, no advertising.
Okay, slow down. You guys, this is the source of everything. Says the Gemara, ma'itamayu derabanan. Why do the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Yehuda? Why is the store owner allowed to give out treats? Free gift. It's not fair competition. So the Amalei, so says Rabban, I'll tell you why. Because this one, who's giving out the nuts, can tell his competitor, Ana maflegna amguzei. I'm giving out nuts. You want to get customers. Va'at plague shiske. You give out, Rashi says, look inside the last Rashi in the line. Purunj. Prunes. And as the Meiri says, prunes are sweeter than nuts. But what am I doing wrong over here? I'm doing something to get customers. You can give even a sweeter treat. Who's stopping you? Now, don't forget, put things in context. Everything there was bound, they kept the laws of Aino. Let's not forget that. It wasn't that free. No, it's people were not allowed to earn more than a sixth. They can add up less than a sixth of markup, which is really not that much. So when you start giving out free stuff, you're cutting into your profits. So is one allowed to undercut the revach of other people? You know, once you have a very small amount of profit, you can only make a living if you have a large amount of quantity. That's already tricky businesses. So it happened to the shmata business in Brazil. You know, you started to earn less and less and less and less and less. You needed to turn over more and more and more and more. All the middle people went out of business. So that is taken into account, but the Chachamim allow you to do it. Weiter. You're not allowed to sell it under the market value. And the Chachamim say, not only can you do it, but you'll be remembered for good. Zachar Latoiv. My Tamad Rabbanon says, the Gemara, Daf Samach Amid Beis, Vishum Deka Marvach Letara. Because when a final merchant, when the storekeeper sells it very cheaply, it forces everyone to lower their prices. Not only do they lower the prices, but the wholesalers have to lower the prices. Because if the other retailers can only sell it for that amount and not more, then they have to pay for it even less. If not, they don't have any business. So it forces everyone to drop their prices. So the merchants lose money. The retailers lose money. The Chachamim allow them to do it because the consumer benefits. You're not allowed to sift bran, because they sifted the bran in order to be able to make much higher markups, which is not fair. Divrei Rav Abba and the Chachamim Matirim. And again, man Chachamim, the Chachamim is Rav Acha. The Tanya, as we just learned, Rav Achi Matir B'Dover Hanira, we learned him in Amud Aleph. If you can taste something before, then you're never cheating. Taste. The Rav Acha says, if I'm selling a product and everyone can see what they're buying, there's no cheat over there. Because if I'm going to overcharge because it's pure beans, but let the consumer be educated. Look at the beans. See how much it costs if it's not sifted. See how much this guy is charging for the sifting. You'll notice that he added 50%. And the consumer can say, you know what? He's adding that much money. Let me buy unsifted. I'll sift it myself. So as long as people know what they're buying and they understand how much they're paying for, they're overpaying or they're underpaying, there's no deception involved. Weiter. Ein mefarkesin lo yasa adam v'chulei. V'lo yasa keilem. You're not allowed to beautify people, animals, or utensils. Tan Rabbanon. The Brice is going to give examples of the sort of beautification which is prohibited. Ein misharbitin asa behema. You're not allowed to make the animal's hair stand out. When the value of the animal had to do with the animal's size. The fatter, the better. So you can have a skinny animal, but if there was techniques that makes the hair stand out, it would look fatter than it is. That's, you're not allowed to do that. The A noivchin bikarvayim, you're not allowed to inflate the intestines. The same thing. Think about it. If you inflate the intestines, the animal blows up, but it's full of hot air. And then the guy he pays high price, he comes home and he paid for air. The ain't shaitan as a basar, but you're not allowed to soak meat into water. Until now, a marble steak is chashev. It's more expensive, at least in many areas. The more fatty steaks. So meat that is not that fatty, if you soak it in water before you sell it, we should ask Bedel here. It looks whiter. It looks like it's a marble steak. People should not learn how to cheat from learning. That's the main thing. Weight and look, weight. So the weight. Okay, they didn't sell it by weight. Mistama, they sell it by a cut. And God forgive us over here. Weiter. My ein misharbatin. What's the meaning of how did they. My means not what it means. How did they make the hair stand? Says the Gemara. Hachi, here in Bavel, Targimu, Mayim the Chizra, that the animal before it was slaughtered, they gave the animal to drink water soaked in bran. And he drank it, he got it like artificially inflated. That is the way they would do it. And you're not allowed to do that. And Ze'iri says, in the name of Rav Kahana, remember we just learned in Bava Kama, Rav Kahana already moved to Eretz Yisrael. Remember that? That mizakvita, that they would brush the hair, push it. Right before they would sell, they would brush the hair. And it would look bigger. Shmuel shara lemirma tumei lesarbel. Shmuel allowed for merchants that are selling materials to attach silk fringes around the edges. That is something permitted. In other words, you're beautifying the garment, but you're not beautifying it with hot air. You're taka added something. Now, if people would pay a lot more for the little silk edges, that's okay. Again, like Ravacha, you know what you're getting. You're getting a standard coat, and the guy added a fancy finish, and for that you'll pay more if you want that. That's on you. Rav Yehuda shara likaskusei kerame. Rav Yehuda allowed people to starch decorated garments. And when you starch a garment, you make it look better. But that's okay. Next, Rav shara lemeidak tzirade, or tzirade. They used to sell canvas. Canvas is a very rough material, and it was very cheap. Now, if you would beat it, you would make the strand softer. And you know, the softer the garment, the more valuable. So Rabba allowed people to beat the garment before they sold it. Because taka, when you made it softer, it's not like the examples before, it went away. You up the quality and you charge more money. That's okay. Rabba shara litzalume gede. Rabba allowed people to paint arrows. A painted arrow, well, I don't know what today would be, is more expensive. Rav Papa bar Shmuel. I don't know, do people do that today? Do people painted their arms? Could be, it's a gimmick. You're going to get a gun that is painted. Rav Papa bar Shmuel, shari litzalume dikule. He allowed people to paint wicker baskets. Again, you're getting a wicker basket, you're getting it painted, and you're charging more money. I freg di gemara, how can all this be allowed? V'ha anan tanan. We learned in our Mishnah, ein mefarkesin, you're not allowed to beautify, not a man, evet, when you sell a slave. V'lo yasa behema, nor animals, nor utensils. So the gemara answers, leikasha, ha, when they did allow you to beautify it, that's b'chadati, when the article that you are selling is new to begin with. So you're making it from new into even, you know, super beautiful. That you're allowed to do. But when our Mishnah was speaking about you selling an old utensil, and you're putting something on the finish to make it look new, that's already deceptive. In other words, if you're going to have an old garment, and you're going to hang on the old garment a new silk lining, or new silk fringe, people are going to look at the fringe and think the whole garment is new. Deceptive is not allowed. Vaiter. Pirkos the other mahi. How can you beautify a person? Akasha. They didn't live here in L.A.
Older guy that wants to like dye his hair to look younger.
That's it. Look. That's mamish the example.
I know someone wants that.
Ki ha dahu avda. Listen, ki avda sabah. There was once an old slave. This is a gevalda kemaisa. The ozel tzavei l'reshe. He painted, he dyed his hair. Uladikne and his beard. And now he's black. Ozel akamadarav. He came in front of Rava. And we're speaking about an Eved Kanani. There was no Eved Divris in the times of Chazal. Amar Lei, and he tells Rava, Zivnon, buy me. Amar Lei, so Rava tells this Eved Kanani, Yiu Aniim B'nei Beischa. Says in the Mishnah, that poor people should be members of your household, meaning that b'nei beischa, that you have to give charity to your family first, meaning that we have to give charity to Jews first. So if I'm going to buy an Eved, I'm not going to buy an Eved Kanani. If I need a helper, I'm going to hire a Jew. So Asalik Amid Rav Papa Bar Shmuel, he came to Rav Papa Bar Shmuel. He told him, I'm available for sale. And Zavnei and Rav Papa Bar Shmuel bought him. Yom Echad, one day came, Armalei, Rav Papa Bar Shmuel tells his newly acquired Eved Kanani, Ashkiyan Maya, bring me a cup of water. I should bring you a cup of water. Azal he went. Chavrei L'reishei, he made his hair white again. The dyes then didn't last, however much time it lasts today. It was some dye, some mud. He washed his hair and it became white. Uladiknei took out the dye from his beard and he came back to him with white hair and a white beard. And Amar Lein, the Eved Kanani, tells his new owner, Rav Papa Bar Shmuel, Chazi, take a look at me. I'm older than your father. I should bring for you a cup of water. You have to honor your elders. So Kari Anafshei, Rav Papa Bar Shmuel read on himself, the Pasuk in Mishlei, that a tzaddik mitzara nechlatz. A tzaddik is rescued from a tzaddim. That is in reference to Rava. Rava learned Pshat and Pirkei Avos. You want to buy someone, you want to hire someone, hire a Jew first. Your family comes first. And then, so that's the tzaddik. So he didn't buy you. He didn't get fooled by you. But v'yavai acher, and here the Ein Yaakov writes on the side that really in the pasuk it says v'yavai rasha tachtav, and the wicked one takes his place. But he didn't want to call himself a rasha. She says another person that wasn't so careful, that you family first, which is me, and now I have a slave. Not only will he not serve me, I'm going to end up serving him. And with this, hadan alach hazav, we finish. Perek Hazav, which is a Gevaldik Perek, Hashem shall help us that we should take a come back to it and learn it.
Amen.
And now we are starting the next amazing Perek, Ezehu Neshach. Whoever was here with us in the trailer, remember when we finished Ezehu Neshach, we said that we have to come back and chazer it. Also, Yashikirch to Rabbi Tauber, who a couple of years ago gave fantastic shiurim in the laws of Ribbis. It's important to give a short Hagdama. Also, big yashar koyach to Rabbi Yosef Grossman, who gave a gewaltige synopsis of the laws of Ribbis. You can get it online. And here, I'll do the best I could. So first of all, there are the laws of Ribbis, interestingly, of charging interest when you lend money, they're not written in Choshen Mishpat. Perek Hazav Oino is Choshen Mishpat. Deceiving is Choshen Mishpat. Overcharging, undercharging, price fraud. The laws of Ribbis are written in Yoyre Deyam. And the Tur in the Hagdama explains why they're written in Yoyre Deyam. Because you're not doing anything wrong bein adam lachaveroi, between man and man, if I lend you money and I tell you I want interest and you agree to that, not only did I not fool you or wrong you, many times the borrower knows that with this money they can invest in a business and they're going to earn a lot of profit. It's a favor for them. So there is no bein adam lachaveroi issue. But the Bein Adam Lamakim issue is huge. And our sages used expressions when it came to charging interest that it's very rarely found. You know, they said that whoever lends money beribis, kolamalva beribis, is nechasim esmoitetim, he'll lose his property, he'll lose his wealth. Kol hamalva beribis, they say, is ki'ilu kafar b'yitzias Mitzrayim. They are denying that God took us out of Egypt. And it says in other places that they are denying B'lakai Yisrael. They're denying the God, God forbid. Yesh oimrim, that whoever lends money beribis, einoy kam b'tchias ha-meisim. Wow, that's how strict ribis is. There are many lavim in ribis. Ribis is prohibited not only on the lender to lend, but there is a lav on the borrower to borrow. Now the numbers of lavin are something we'll learn in our sugyas. There are many more lavin on the lender. I think there are five lavin. Five times the Torah says to the lender, don't lend for interest. On the loiv, I think there's only one lav, but nonetheless, the isur is on the lender, on the borrower, we'll see, on the witnesses, on the scribe. No one can be involved in ribis.
It's worse than Russia.
It's a very serious prohibition. Now, there are different categories of ribis, and let's make a short synopsis. Ribis ketsutza, fixed ribis, which is ribis min hatoira, means that if a lender lends money only by a loan, and when the loan is happening, they make up that when you return the money to me, you're going to give me an additional amount. That is ribis min hatoira, That is Ribbis Ksutza. We're going to have later on Daf Samach Gimel Amud Beis, Rab Nachman gives the klal, klala de Ribbisa, kol agar notar lei osir, which means whenever money is loaned, and the reason why the borrower is agreeing to give back more money is because the lender is waiting to get his money back. So he's basically paying for the wait. I waited, I'll get more. That is what the isur is. Agar notar. Now midoraisa, again, that's only by a loan. Important to note that by ribis, if you charge ribis, not only are you violating all these laven, and it's that serious, but yoitze bedayonim, which means that the one who paid ribis, the borrower, can take the lender to a din toira, and Beis Din will force the lender to give back money, to give back the ribis, the interest to the borrower. That is a chosh mishpat aspect, and that's also why on ribis midaraisa there's no malchus, because it's like theft, just like by theft by gezela. Since it's a lav hanitek la asei veheshev esak gezela, you don't get malchus. If a person charged the ribis with all the chumras, you're not going to get malchus because you have yoytze bedayonim. Now there is ribis midrabanan, otherwise known as avak ribis, and there are many examples of avak ribis. Number one will be by selling and buying. And the example that we just spoke about recently, this is just a few examples we'll give, is if I prepay for a product. I'm prepaying for a product when that product is not available on the market. I'm prepaying for a product when you, the seller, don't yet have it. And why am I prepaying? I'm prepaying because I'm getting it now for a cheaper price. I know that when this will be available, it's going to cost $5. I'm going to give you now only $4. And when the product comes out, you're going to give me that product. Now, I did not lend money, but it's similar to ribis because I am getting for less money something which has more value. For $4, I'm getting something worth $5. Why is that happening? It's similar because agar notar, because there was a wait. In other words, the seller is the borrower. The seller is the borrower. He's getting the money before. He can use this money until the article becomes available. And because of him being able to use money for a month, he's willing to give back something which has more value. So that's similar to ribis.
A down payment is the same issue?
A down payment is not the same issue, and a lot more we'll learn later. Sabisa, another ribis midrabanan, like we spoke out before. I am asking you, lend to me. I want to borrow a quantity of flour when this flour is not yet available on the market. And I'm going to give you back the same quantity. Even that is prohibited if, when I give you back the same quantity, then it's worth more money. So we're going to learn a lot about that later. In other words, there are times that prepayment, in which people pay less money, is avak ribis. We'll get more details into that later. Now, the rule of avak ribis is, eino yoytze bedayonim. If someone paid this avak ribis, you can't get it back in a din Torah, but you have to give it back. If you want to be good with God, then you give back the avak ribis. Then there is another category of ribis. It's called ribis mukdemes and ribis mucheres. Let's remember these rules. Ribis mukdemes, ribis mucheres means whenever ribis, something is given, not during the time period of the loan. For example, I am borrowing money for 1 month. And I know that I'm going to go over to you to ask you for money. Before I even asked for the loan, you're going to give me 100, I'm going to give you back 100. But before that happened, I give you a gift. Why am I giving you a gift? Because tomorrow when I'm going to ask you for a loan without ribis, I want to make sure you're going to be good with me, you'll give it to me. Likewise, ribis, that's ribis mukdemes. Ribis mu'ucheres is the same thing. After I paid back the money, I give you a gift. I do something to you that I normally would not have done. Moment, I give you something. Now there is an important Tosfos in Gittin that says that when a zman muflag, when a large amount of time passes after the loan ended, then the borrower is allowed to give a gift, not stam a gift, but a matana meruba, a big gift. Question is, what's zman muflag? If not, you're going to complicate it. It means if you lent me money, I can never do you a favor later. So, by the way, Rabbi Vosner says that zman muflag means 30 days, not 10 years. It's after the loan ended. And 30 days passes, and now I want to give you a gift, I'm allowed to do it. And the final, fourth category that we'll speak out now is called the ribis devarim. Ribis devarim means that the borrower is not giving back more money, or he's not giving an additional item, or he's not giving an item that has more value, but he's saying something to the lender that he otherwise would not have said. Like, Shalom Aleichem. I never say hi to you, but you lent me money, So now you walk into shul, oh, hi, good Shabbos, how are you? That's called ribis devarim. Or buying a person an aliyah.
What about giving him an aliyah?
Giving him an aliyah. Or giving him sandikois. You know, it's things that are non-tangibles, but it's in a scenario where I never did it before. I'm only doing it because you lent me money. That's called ribis devarim. And the big machlekes between the poiskim of our generation is thank you. Rav Moshe writes in Egedes Moshe that if you lend me money, I cannot say thank you. Because I'm going to end up giving you back the money. So what did you gave me money. What did you get from me? The money and a thank you. Rabbi Eliyashiv says that thank you today means nothing.
Yes.
Doesn't mean anything. So you can say thank you. You'll notice by many Frumah people, knowing yeshiva when he had the little loans, you know, can you lend me a dollar? So when their borrower said thank you, the lender says, that means you're not giving me back the money. If you're not going to give back the money, you can say thank you. You're a ganef. But the problem of rib is, devarim is if you're going to give back the money, then I thank you. So don't give me thank yous, just pay me back. Many people, many Frumah people say, listen to these words, yasher koyach for the tircha. You'll hear that. Yasher koyach for the tircha, thank you for the effort. They're saying that expression, not to have rib is devarim. In other words, I'm not thanking you for the money. You gave me, you lent me $10,000. I'm going to give you back the $10,000 and nothing else. Thank you for the trouble that you underwent for writing me the check. Okay, having said all that, one final words of introduction, and that is the following. The Torah gives different names for ribis. The words ribis means to increase. Ribis, the Torah uses the words marbis. The Torah uses the words tarbis. They all come from the root of increasing. The Torah also calls ribis neshech. A bite. Now, we can say simply that whether we use the words marbis or neshach depends regarding whose vantage point are we referring to. When we're using the word ribis or marbis or tarbis, who is the one that gets something in increase? The lender. The lender, if he lends for interest, midaraisa, ktsutsa, midarabanan, he's ending up, he gave a little and he got something more. Who is the one that gets bitten? Bitten means that he has to give something that he never got, the borrower. So from the vantage point of the loiva, we use the words neshech. From the vantage points of the malva, we use the words tarbis or marbis or ribis. Says the Mishnah, starting the Pedik, Ezeo neshech ve'ezeo tarbis. The Torah uses two expressions. And the Mishnah wants to give you examples. Give me an example of neshech and give me an example of tarbis. Now what the Mishnah will end up doing, very interestingly, the Mishnah is going to give one example of ribis min ha-toira, and that will be the example of neshech, and we're going to learn the Mishnah like the Rishonim will explain that this example does not exclude tarbis. It's an example where you have both neshech and tarbis. In other words, can there be a scenario where one side gets bitten, but the other side doesn't get anything in the increase? Or vice versa. Can you have a scenario where the malva is going to end up with a marbis, but the loiva did not get bitten? Ultimately, we're not going to find such a case. Which means that whenever there is neshech, if the loiva is getting bitten, the malva is getting an increase. That is true by ribis d'oiraisa. So by ribis d'oiraisa, you cannot have one without the other. If there is neshech, there is marbis. Why are you using different names? It depends whose vantage point. The loiva is crying, I got bitten. The malva is saying, I got something in addition. If it's a ribis d'oraisa, it's always one with the other. Now by ribis d'rabbanan, there's going to be a scenario where there's going to be tarbis, where the lender is going to end up with something in addition, but the borrower did not lose anything. There we could find a case where there's one without the other. So ezel neshech, what's the case of neshech again? This will be a case of neshech and tarbis together because we're going to give a toida case. A toida case of ribis is only when there is a loan. So it gives the Mishnah two examples, and the two examples are based that in the toida and the psukim and vayikra, right now we'll speak out of pasuk in Bahar, the toida gives an example of loaning money and of loaning food. And in both cases, the lashon hakasav is as kaspacham loy sitem loy bin neshech. So the Torah uses two expressions. One is about money, one is about food, but it's both. It's a pasuk in the Torah. Don't lend money to get more money back. Don't lend food to get more food back. Says the Mishnah. I'm lending you a seller. We just had this in the last Pedik. A seller is 4 dinarim. So during the loan, the lender says, I'm giving you 4 dinarim. You give me back 5 dinarim. That is called ribis ketsutza. It's a loan, and during the loan, they made up to give back more money. We're going to see later in the Gemara, if a loan happened, during the loan, they never said you have to give back more money. But the fact is that the borrower gave back money so late, he feels bad, he adds money, that's only midrabanan. It's midrabanan, but it's not midoraisa. Ribis ketsutza means that when I lent the money, I told you I'm lending you, and you're giving me back more. Example of money. Example in food is sasayim, I'm lending you 2 saw of grain, and you are going to give me back 3 saw of wheat. So in these cases, asur mepnei shehu noishech, this is prohibited because the borrower is getting bitten. And again, not only is this neshech, but the borrower is losing, the lender is gaining. So this is a case of both neshech and tarbis. Now, ezeu tarbis, is there a case, says the Mishnah, where the borrower is not getting bitten? But it's still prohibited because the lender is getting something more than he gave. So the Mishnah says, yeah, I'll find you a case, which is only a case of Dirabanan. What will be the case? Now, this case will be further learned in the later Dafim, but let's go back to the example that we spoke out by me prepaying. When is prepaying for an item prohibited? Only if that is before the market price came out. If the market price came out, let's say I am buying a pound of apples, and there are apples available on the market, and the price for the apples are already designated, and I am prepaying you with the current value, then, first of all, if the seller, yeshloi, if he already has those apples, for sure there's no ribis even midrabanan. Even if he's not going to give me the apples now, and when I'm going to ask for the apples 2 months later, then the apples will cost more money. That's not ribis even midrabanan, because when I paid for the apples, I'm giving him the current price. But even if this seller doesn't have it, even if it's einloi, if it's available in the market, that means he could have taken the money, he could have bought those apples now for that amount. If he didn't do it, then later the apples go up in price, it's not a problem, it's not even ribis midrabanan. So we're going to begin with this case, that hamar beve peiris ketzad. It's a case where someone is going to end up with more produce. For example, lakech imenu chitin bediner zav akur. The buyer tells the seller, I want to buy 1 kur, a large 30 saw, a large amount of wheat, and I'm going to pay you 1 golden dinar. We learned in last Pedek, 1 golden dinar is 25 silver dinarim. And this is in a case where the market price came out, and that's how much wheat costs right now. So I'm giving you the fair value for wheat today. Now, the seller didn't have wheat. And v'chein hashar, and that was the market price. It doesn't matter that the seller doesn't have wheat, because he could have taken the dinner, he could have bought now 1 koir of chitin, and even if he would deliver it 6 months later, no one is getting more, no one is getting less. Now, the thing is, he did not have the wheat. When the buyer comes to collect the wheat, by that time, the price of wheat went up. So far, there's no problem. Right now, the same amount, 1 golden dinar won't do it. You got to spend 30 silver dinarim. In other words, it costs now 5 more. Amdu chitin belama dinarim, still no problem. Because he could have bought it before. Now, Amar Loin, the buyer tells the seller, I want you to know, ten lichitai, I want you to give me the wheat. Why? And he gives him a reason. He didn't have to give him a reason, but he tells him, "Shani roitzel lemoichrim, because I want to sell it. Now that I know that my wheat that I already prepaid for is worth 30, oh, now I will sell it, and I'm going to take that 30 dinarim, and I'm going to buy wine. V'likach behem yain. I'm going to buy wine. Omar loy. So this. Yeah. He paid for the wheat. No problem. He paid, but he says, I want you to give me the wheat. And he tells him, by the way, and that, not because I want to eat the wheat, not because I'm going to sell the wheat, I want the wheat because I want to exchange it for wine. I can get for this wheat 30 saloyim of wine. Comes along that seller and he tells him, hold on, I have wine. He doesn't have wine. I'll get you the wine. Okay, I am accepting that the wheat, even though you only pay 25, now it's worth 30. I'm evaluating it at the current price of 30. There's no ribis even midrabanan. And v'harei loch etzli behen yain, and I'll give you shloishim worth of wine. Here says the Mishnah, even though the wine price came out and there's wine available, if yayin ain loy, if this person doesn't have the wine, Now the problem is it's considered ribis midrabanan. The Bach adds the words asr and wait until the Gemara to see why. Question is, why is it ribis midrabanan? We just said that even if the seller eloi, if you can get it in the market, it's available. So that we have to wait for the Gemara. Let's quickly chaparain. Says the Gemara, mid shavik liribis doiraisa. Since the Mishnah, when it gave an example, oh, one second, this is important. So think about it. So what do we have here? We don't have neshech. We don't have neshech, but we have tarbis. Why is that? First of all, that's the lekeach is the malva. The buyer of the wheat, he's the malva. Get that clear. Who was the one getting bit, so to say?
The malva.
The seller. The seller was not bit. You can't say the seller got bit. Because he could have gotten the wheat. It's on him. He's allowing to exchange 30 seller worth of wheat, one koid, with 30 seller worth of wine. That's taka the price of the market. The only reason why it's prohibited is because if you'll go through with this deal, then the lender, which is the buyer, will end up with more than he started out with. He gave only a 25 seller. He's going to end up with 30 seller worth of wine. A lot more in the Gemara later. So that's a case where it's asr midrabanan because there is tarbis, even though there is no neshech, which is important on behalf of the borrower. So says the Gemara, that me the shavik lidibis doid aisa, v'kom afarash derabanan, since the Mishnah looking for a case where there's only tarbis and there is no neshech. The only example it found was a case midrabanan, that if there would have been a case midoid aisa, where you can have neshech without marbis, or marbis. And the Mishnah gave the case of Neshech without Marbis. But if the Mishnah would have had a case of Marbis without Neshech, Midor Laisa, the Mishnah would have given it. And the Mishnah didn't give it. Is Araya the Neshech with Tarbis Chadamilsi? That you can't find the case, Midor Laisa, with one without the other. The only problem is, if that's true, and it is true, then why did the Torah use two expressions? Why did the Torah write two lavin? And l'chu'ura, that would imply that we could find cases of ribis midoy raisa where there's one without the other. Now, the Gemara is going to conclude, we have to go, we learn a few more minutes, not to stop in the middle, that no, there is no such a case. And the Torah uses different expressions, la'avar olav b'shnei lavin. And really, we spoke out in the introduction, it's really much more than two lavin. There are five lavin on the malva. It means there are many lavin. But now the Gemara is going to do a beautiful thing. We're going to go back and forth to attempt to find a case where you could have one without the other. And the Gemara is going to say, but you don't. And now let's quickly learn the Havamina and the Maskana. Where could you have and where can you not have? It's very simple. V'tizbira. Te'ike neshech b'lei tarbis. V'tarbis b'lei neshech. Find me such a case. Neshech b'lei tarbis. What might have been the case? Hechidami. Look at this. We learned in last Pedik that when you compare copper coins to silver, which is tiva, which is peda? Silver is money, and the payda, the merchandise, is copper. We also learned that whenever there's price fluctuations, the way Torah looks at it is, the money doesn't fluctuate. Merchandise fluctuates. So when we are comparing copper to silver, if there is a change in the exchange, the silver is steady, and the copper fluctuated. So now, look at this case. Ido oisvei, dribis doiraisa. Alone, kitsutsa. So a person lent meya, 100 copper coins, and he tells the borrower, when you give me back, you give me back 120. Classical case of ribis doiraisa. Now, when he lent him the money, how much silver can you buy with 100 copper coins? One danka. One danka is one ma'a. One ma'a is a sixth of a dinar, as we learned in the previous Pedik. Now, when he ended up giving back the money, ulabasoif kaimi may have asked him a danka. You need 120 copper coins to buy the same danka. So think about it. Even though they made up, I'm giving you 100, I want back 120. But when he paid back the 120, that 120 copper prutas has the same silver value as the money that he received. So this can be a case where neshech ika, let's say this is called neshech, because the borrower is getting bitten. He got 100, how much is he giving back? 120. But you can't, the kanach is late because they took a bite out of him. Did the lender get more than he gave? You can argue not. He doesn't have any marbis because he gave one danka. And what is he getting back? One danka. So the borrower is getting a bite because the lender is taking something of him that he never gave. He took 100, he's giving 120 copper prutas. But v'tarbis leka, but you can't say there's tarbis the less late afcha. You can't say that the lender gained money because the danka is, he lent a danka, and he's getting a danka back. Says the Gemara, you cannot consider that a case of neshach without narbis. You know why? Because you can't pick and choose. Miman of Shech. What are you looking at? Are you looking at the time of the loan? Or are you looking back at the time of the payback? So if ibas and mikara azlas, if you're looking at the time of the loan, there's neshach and marbis. Push it. I'm giving you 100, I went back 120. What is that if not ribis? If you're looking at the value of copper versus silver by the time of the payback, and you're arguing there's no marbis, if there's no marbis, there's no neshach. Because what did the borrower get? One danka. What is he giving back? Again, one danka. So therefore, you don't have a case where there's neshach without marbis. Or in the same thing in reverse. V'su, tarbis b'lein ha-shech echidami. What will be the reverse case? Ida ois v'meya b'meya. That the lender tells the borrower, I'm giving you 100 copper coins, you're giving me back 100. It happened to be, again, copper versus silver. Copper is produce. Sabasa. And what happens if there is a price fluctuation that copper becomes more expensive? He's giving him back 100 copper coins, but it's worth more. That mikara kaime meyeb danka. Again, you needed 100 to buy one danka, one ma of silver. Ula basoif meyeb chumsha. One danka is a sixth, we said, of a dinner. Now copper, the 100 is worth a fifth. It's worth more. Copper increased. So what are you going to say over here? That you have a case of there's no bite. Why is there no bite? Because they got 100, he's giving back 100. There's no bite. But the guy got back more value, because when he got back his copper, it's worth more. Again, it's not correct. Because miman of shech, what are you looking at? What time are you looking at? At the time of the loan, 100 for 100. No one is getting bitten, no one is getting more money. If you're looking basar soif, and taka now copper is worth more money, if we're going to look at that, well, just like the guy is getting more money, the one is getting bitten. It goes together. Harei neshach, harei tarbis. Elom arava, I atomaitzi loy neshach, b'loy tarbis, loy tarbis, b'loy neshach. And the Mishnah is meduyik. And when the Mishnah is giving you a case of tarbis without neshach, it's only midrabanan. The Torah gives different words. V'lechol kanakos, v'lalo, v'shnei lavim, to be continued tomorrow.